And the Israeli occupation forces on the ground continue to detonate and destroy more residential buildings and the squares in the western part of Beit Lahia city. And as you know, the Israeli attacks are still intensified also against Beit Hanun city, which is still facing another ground offensive targeting that city after the Israeli occupation forces finished, as you know, Beit Lahia city and Kamal Adwan Hospital. They now turn to Beit Hanun city. Several brutal air raids were carried out and, as you know, took place targeting different parts of Beit Hanun city. And let me say that thousands of the Palestinian people are still believed trapped in different parts of the northern section of Gaza Strip that are still exposed to the ongoing Israeli air raids and attacks. And on the ground, they are still suffering from the deprivation of any humanitarian essentials they need in order to survive the unbearable humanitarian situation here in Gaza Strip.
Meanwhile, the Israeli military has again attacked the Baptist Hospital in Gaza as it continues with attacks on health facilities in the besieged Strip. The top floor of the healthcare facility was hit by artillery shelling. The hospital is located in the Zaytun neighborhood in northern Gaza City. It's been repeatedly besieged and attacked by Israeli ground and air forces. The hospital has been reporting a dramatic surge in admissions and a critical shortage of supplies amid escalating Israeli violence in Gaza City and Jabalia. The shelling of the Baptist Hospital comes shortly after Israeli forces stormed, set ablaze, and closed Kamal Adwan Hospital, the last major functioning health facility in northern Gaza. In an extraordinary new tragedy for the people in the Gaza Strip, four babies have died in Khan Yunis due to cold weather over the past week. The Gaza Minister of Health says more people are likely to freeze to death if the crisis and the lack of fuel goes on. Our correspondent, Ahmed Al-Najjar, reports from Khan Yunis.
This worn-down tent is the makeshift shelter of Sila Al-Fasih's family. It was home to a Palestinian baby girl who died inside it last Wednesday in Khan Yunis because her heart stopped due to the frigid temperatures. After her birth, she began her life in this tent for the displaced, which, like her fragile body, is barely withstanding the harsh weather.
We live in this worn-out tent with no proper clothes, mattresses, or blankets. After months of suffering, my wife gave birth to Sila. We couldn't provide her with the necessary clothing or warm supplies as we were displaced from Gaza City and lost everything. Last Wednesday, we woke up to find her like a piece of ice and her color was blue. I quickly took her to the UK Medfield Hospital. But the doctors told me that she had frozen to death as her heart stopped due to the shivering temperatures.
The Ministry of Health announced that at least four newborn babies lost their lives in makeshift camps due to freezing temperatures, a lack of essential means of warmth, and the severe conditions of these shelters. They further warned that more children could perish should this deprivation persist.
Unfortunately, the four cases that you mentioned, they were below 1 month of old. All of them were in the tents in the near the seashore. All of them, they were extremely hypothermic. They were arrested at the tent and came to the hospital. In fact, we see, unfortunately, 5 to 6 cases every day, but they are reaching the reception room alive, and we are dealing with them. We are doing the resuscitation for them, but these four cases that you mentioned, they were already died at the tent and came to the hospital. This is due to hypothermia, as we mentioned. You know, this unit is unable to move, unable to produce energy.
In Gaza, children are born and die without ever experiencing warmth or safety. Their short lives are overshadowed by the suffering caused by the Israel's genocidal policies, which ultimately claim their lives through bombs, starvation, or the cold grip of death. Ahmed Al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
The occupied West Bank has experienced a night of violence following incursions by the Israeli forces into different towns and cities. Israeli settlers also launched attacks in Ramallah, targeting Palestinian civilians there. Our correspondent, Naga Hamid, joined us from Ramallah earlier with details.
Until this moment, local sources are talking about the clashes that are happening inside Nablus city and the surrounding villages of Nablus, like we have just mentioned, like Rajib and Kufr Qilli. The situation, the tension in Nablus and in the northern cities of the West Bank continues to accumulate as we are, of course, talking about Jenin, Tul Kerem, Nablus, and the area of Tubas and the northern valleys. The tension over there is rising. Many incursions have been reported to areas like Yabad and areas surrounding Tul Kerem refugee camp and Tul Kerem city. The settlers have attacked Palestinians working in their fields since the hours of the morning and until this moment. We are talking about on and off attacks that is happening to Palestinians in the area of Sinwad, which has witnessed several clashes and as it is very close to Al-Fra settlement. Another unfortunate headline over here that we feel very heavy-hearted to be broadcasting is the killing of our colleague Shada al-Sabbagh inside Jenin refugee camp by Shada's family have announced by PA fire inside Jenin refugee camp.
Palestinian resistance movement, the Islamic Jihad, has slammed as a heinous crime the assassination of a female journalist by the Palestinian Authority forces in the occupied West Bank. The Islamic Jihad urged the PA security forces to immediately stop attacks on residents in the Jenin refugee camp. The resistance group also urged the perseverance of national unity against common enemy and the de-escalation of tensions in Palestine. Shaza al-Sabbagh was shot in the head during a raid by PA forces in the Jenin refugee camp. She's the 11th person to be killed since PA forces started an offensive in the camp 3 weeks ago to root out what are called lawless elements. Palestinian rights organizations have called for dialogue to resolve the Jenin conflict. Now, moving on, Iranians taking to the streets across the country to mark the anniversary of nationwide rallies that to put an end to post-election riots of 2009. Rallies already were held in several cities, and more are expected to take place in the coming hours. The centerpiece, a demonstration displaying the capital Tehran this evening. Iranians marched on the streets in December 2009 to show their support for the Islamic establishment and to denounce the months-long riots that followed the presidential election that year. The rallies put an end to what came to be known as the 2009 sedition. Meanwhile, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps issued a statement on the occasion. The force said the 2009 incidents were a plot hatched by the West against Iran. The IRGC once again stressed readiness to counter the enemy's plots aimed at creating insecurity in the Islamic Republic. All right, to discuss that issue, joined in our studio by Marzia Hashemi. So, Marzia, tell us about that day. You are here, you live here, you work here. So tell us about what happened prior to the election, during the election, and post-election, how you saw this happen.
Right, Behrouz. Well, let me start prior to the election, actually, because run-up to the June elections that year, 2009. It was really interesting for me because the year before I had just moved back to Iran from the U.S., and the excitement and the interest in the election was just unbelievable. I remember going out with my teenage son at the time, who wanted to go to various rallies, and seeing various groups supporting different candidates across from each other, just gathering at the main squares, main circles in the city, and saying various slogans or poems, very tongue-in-cheek with each other, but actually very amicable, very friendly. And then, of course, we had the election, which elections here in Iran are held on a Friday. And I remember going out on Saturday morning and seeing parts of the city basically ripped apart. It was quite unbelievable. ATMs were torn out of their places. Different areas were burned. And very atypical of an Iranian reaction to a situation, if they're upset. We saw from the very beginning, Behrouz, the West, and prior to the elections, talking about the possibility that cheating would take place. And of course, since that time, we've seen that so many places throughout the world. But they really focus on that a lot, and they had said the polls had shown that this other candidate was supposed to win. And of course, their polls were only concentrated in the northern part of Tehran. This is a country of 85 million people and different perspectives. And especially the more affluent North Tehran is very different from the rest of the country. So we saw how the media, that's when it really kicked in, what the media was doing and the role that they played, basically representing the Western hegemonic front. For example, on various stations, Farsi stations, of course working for the UK or the US, they would say, for example, today there's supposed to be an anti-government or anti-establishment rally at this place. Basically, they were given instructions and telling people where to go. There are a couple of different issues here, Behrouz. On the one hand, if there's a problem, as there are problems in Iran, like any other country, and the people want to complain, and they can, and they go to the streets. The problem here in Iran is that because of the Western plots, they usually try to take over just regular peaceful rallies and turn them into riots. The Iranian nation as a whole, a peaceful nation, they would not be ripping up out the ATMs or breaking the bank windows, and this the day after. This was something to cause problems and create division inside the country.
Mazen, you told us how this happened, and you, as you said it rightly, it was orchestrated from outside, especially by Western corporate media. So tell us about what happened later on and how.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, throughout this time, we dealt with 6 months, actually, from June to December of basically a lot of up and downs, a lot of protests, violence, people being killed. And it was a really difficult time in so many ways. And at the same time, the propaganda. I just want to report one thing, Behrouz, because I remember this very clearly. There was a BBC report, actually, one day, and saying they had they brought this witness and saying that the blood was running down the streets of this particular Meydun Imam Khomeini, that people had protested and that the security forces were shooting and blood was in the street. We sent a reporter right then, right to that area to actually show it. I was on air at the time, and our reporter went there and showed the situation, what was happening, and it was calm. So this is what we faced then and continue to face, of course, with plots that continue against the Islamic Republic. And I want to say, though, it took 6 months. After 6 months, the people themselves turned out in mass because there was a situation that took place on the holy day of Ashura, which is, of course, a very solemn day in Shia Islamic history. And during that day, there were more riots and more attacks. That's when the people realized that these were not insiders, because Iranians, no matter the perspective, there's a certain respect for the Islamic holidays, especially Ashura. And after that, that's when the people themselves came out and said, enough is enough. And that day is Noe Day on the Iranian calendar. And today is the anniversary, the 15th anniversary of that situation, that one more time the people of Iran shut down the plots of the U.S. and its cohorts.
Yeah, that also reminds me of another incident like this. They said in Haftatir Square there is something, and I know there was nothing. We sent a reporter there on a motorbike, and we showed that it was 3 days ago. It's gone. This is what's been actually, as you also said, going on against our country, biased reporting and, you know, stretching the facts. Thank you so much for that, Narzi Hashe, my colleague here. And with that, we come to the end of this newscast from Tehran.
Interested to know about history, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune in to IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Christian world transforms into a magical wonderland, Christmas breathes warmth and joy into the hearts of Christ's followers. Streets adorned with twinkling lights and vibrant decorations invite families and friends to gather, sharing laughter and cherished memories. The air is filled with the delightful aroma of festive treats, and the sound of carols resonates, creating a sense of unity and love among all. It's a time when the spirit of giving shines brightest, encouraging people to reach out to those in need and spread kindness. This enchanting season encapsulates the essence of humanity, telling us that hope, love, and togetherness can illuminate even the darkest of nights. In Iran, Christmas is primarily celebrated by the small but vibrant Christian community, especially in cities like Tehran, Tabriz, and Isfahan. This day is a public holiday for these communities, and the atmosphere is filled with joy and festivity. Stay with us as we have come to St. Sarkis Cathedral, nestled in the heart of Tehran. Inside the cathedral, we spoke with Arash Averdian, the representative of Armenians from Tehran and northern Iran in the Islamic Consultative Assembly. He shared that Iranian Armenians celebrate two major events each year.
As Armenians in Iran, we celebrate two major festivals each year. One is in early winter, which is Christmas, our religious celebration. And the other is in early spring, which is Nowruz, the national holiday of all Iranians. This is because we live in a country called Iran, an ancient land with a rich civilization that has managed to bring together various ethnic groups and followers of different religions to live peacefully and harmoniously side by side, free from any form of intolerance or racism.
The cathedral is a stunning statement to the city's rich Armenian heritage and vibrant Christian community. Built in the early 20th century, this beautiful cathedral features striking neo-Gothic architecture, characterized by its soaring spires and intricate stained glass windows that bathe the interior in colorful light. A focal point for religious and cultural activities, the cathedral hosts various events, including traditional Armenian services, weddings, and community gatherings, fostering a deep sense of belonging among its parishioners. We also met with Gerard Mansourian, who represents the Armenians of Isfahan and southern Iran in the Islamic Consultative Assembly.
Could you please tell us more information regarding the Christian community, the Christmas celebrations in Iran?
The presence of Christian Armenians in Isfahan dates back over 450 years, and in areas like Urmia, it goes back to the early days of Christianity. The coexistence of Armenians with their Muslim brothers is a remarkable example of the peaceful life of followers of different religions in Iran. During the New Year, Armenians always participate in New Year celebrations. The streets are filled with vibrant colors, and the shops in Armenian neighborhoods are full of pine trees and Christian symbols. During this time, Christians are busy preparing to celebrate the New Year in the best possible way with their families. Religious ceremonies are held in churches in calm, warm, and friendly environments.
Serene atmosphere within the cathedral's walls invites visitors to reflect and appreciate the harmony that exists among diverse cultures in Iran. In a bustling city like Tehran, such a historic place promotes understanding and connection between different communities. And this is just one out of over 7,000 churches in the country.
Unlike many neighboring countries, in Iran, the government allocates specific funds for the maintenance, restoration, and renovation of our religious sites as Christians. In contrast, in many neighboring countries, not only are Christian religious sites unprotected, but they have also been destroyed. Iranian culture, with its religious tolerance, interaction, and peaceful coexistence, are factors that, if embraced by others, would prevent the oppression and suffering of followers of other faiths.
Christmas is a time when many across the world celebrate the message of love that transcends boundaries and cultures. It reminds us to extend kindness, compassion, and understanding towards others. Yet, in stark contrast, we are witnessing profound pain and suffering in Gaza and Lebanon, where people have been in the crosshairs of the Israeli regime for months.
Unfortunately, especially over the past year, we have witnessed the brutal attacks by the Israeli regime in Gaza, the bombing of religious sites for Muslims and Christians in the occupied territories, the destruction of mosques and churches and even hospitals. The massacre of innocent women, men, children has created a tragic situation in the land where Jesus Christ, the prophet of peace and kindness, was born.
In Gaza and Lebanon, countless lives have been affected by violence and despair since October last year. Families are torn apart and communities are shattered. The genocidal practices being committed by Israel serve as a tragic reminder of how far it can stray from the ideals of love and peace that Christmas embodies. Authorities in Gaza reported on December 16th that more than 45,000 people have been killed in the enclave in the last 14 months, as humanitarians condemn new deadly airstrikes across the war-torn strip, including on a UN school-turned shelter. Needless to say, these statistics are conservative, as in the chaos of conflict, it can take time for accurate casualty figures to emerge, and initial reports might only capture a fraction of the actual numbers. Moreover, the breakdown of communication infrastructure during conflicts can lead to underreporting. Reports may take time to filter in, and some areas may be entirely unaccounted for.
متاسفانه در یک سال گذشته در سال 2024
Unfortunately, in the year that is coming to an end, there have been many upheavals in the region, particularly in Gaza. The Israeli regime has conducted the brutal killings, more accurately, genocide of defenseless people in Gaza. According to the Genocide Convention adopted in 1948, even forcibly displacing people from their homes constitutes genocide, let alone the relentless killings and bombings that have claimed the lives of thousands of innocent people, much of which has occurred in Gaza and Lebanon. Alongside the bombings, the Israeli regime has prevented food and even water from entering the Gaza region. It's just horrific.
Yet Muslims are not the only victims of Israel's indiscriminate strikes. Just 8 months into the Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza, Marcin Aghabekian Shaheen, State Minister of Foreign Affairs and Diaspora, released figures in Ramallah during her meeting with a delegation from Churches for Middle East Peace. The Israeli war has resulted in the death of 3% of Gaza's Christians and the destruction of churches amid restrictions on Christians in the West Bank, Shaheen told the gathering, according to a foreign ministry statement. The fact is, Christians share the same challenges as their Muslim peers in Gaza. Back in 1967, when Israel occupied Gaza at the end of the Six-Day War, there were still some 7,000 Christians there. Their numbers have since fallen to barely 1,000 and now represent a blend of Catholics and Orthodox. Some have immigrated to the West, others to the West Bank or other Arab countries.
Let us not forget the behavior that the Israelis have exhibited towards various ethnic groups in the occupied Palestinian territories. This child-killing regime has appropriated almost all the land belonging to Armenians, forcing them into involuntary exile and systematically destroying their properties by various means. In fact, the treatment of Palestinian Muslims has mirrored that of Palestinian Armenians, as both groups have been witnessed silence from international organizations. At best, they only speak about but take no meaningful action against the crimes of Israel.
This Christmas, as the world celebrates the spirit of hope and renewal,
Somber yet resilient gatherings take place in churches amid the overwhelming backdrop of the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Filled with flickering candles and soft carols, each church becomes a sanctuary for those seeking solace and connection during this turbulent time. Perhaps Armenian Christians can empathize most with the suffering of Muslims in Gaza, who have faced grave violence and loss amid the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide. More than a century ago, they underwent a similar situation, which later became known as the Armenian Genocide, which occurred from 1915 to 1923 and resulted in the systematic extermination of around 1.5 million Armenians by the Ottoman Empire. This shared experience of persecution highlights the universality of suffering, regardless of religious affiliation, as innocent civilians become victims of broader geopolitical struggles. Our day was enriched by a visit to Father Sahak Khosravian of the Armenian Diocese of Tehran.
Christ says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God." If Christ speaks of peace, we, in following him, should also have a concern for establishing peace in the world and avoid war, bloodshed, and racism. This is a message from Christ to all believers. However, unfortunately, throughout history, actions have contradicted the teachings of Christ. The world has been filled with war, bloodshed, racism, and consequently, genocide. The Armenians were among the first nations to fall victim to genocide at the hands of the Ottomans in the early 20th century. Today, it is said that if that genocide had been prevented, subsequent genocides might not have occurred. And perhaps we would not witness the genocides in Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria. It is truly regrettable.
The aggressive actions of the Israeli regime have extended beyond just the occupied territories. Neighboring countries, particularly Lebanon, have had to endure the extension of regime's belligerent behavior. As of early November 2024, Israeli attacks on Lebanon has killed more than 3,000 and injured more than 13,000 Lebanese people in the months of fighting between Hezbollah and Israeli forces along the border, according to the Lebanese Ministry of Public Health. There were 589 women and at least 185 children among the dead. The death toll came as an estimated 1.2 million of Lebanon's population were forcibly displaced from cities, towns, and villages, as well as neighborhoods in the capital, Beirut, which Israel bombed repeatedly. We have a lot more to cover today, but first, let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. AP News, Israeli strikes in Gaza kill at least 22 as Vatican envoy visits Christians for pre-Christmas Mass. Israeli strikes across the Gaza Strip overnight and into Sunday killed at least 22 people, including 5 children, Palestinian medical officials said, while Gaza's small Christian community celebrated a pre-Christmas Mass. Israeli authorities allowed a rare Gaza visit by the leader of the Catholic Church in the Holy Land, Cardinal Pierre Battista Pizzaballa, for the Mass, while the ever-present buzz of Israeli drones was heard outside. One of the latest Israeli strikes hit a school housing displaced people in Gaza City and killed at least 8, including 3 children, according to Gaza's health ministry. Israel's military said it struck Hamas militants sheltering there. Dozens of worshippers gathered in the Holy Family Church in Gaza City as Pizzaballa and other clergy celebrated Mass. A twinkling Christmas tree was decorated with golden ornaments. I want to say, to tell you that all the world, not only the Christian world, all the world is with you. So the war will finish and we will rebuild, the Cardinal said, urging Gazans to never be afraid. Reuters. Pope calls Gaza airstrikes cruelty after Israeli ministers' criticism. Pope Francis on Saturday again condemned Israeli airstrikes in Gaza a day after an Israeli minister publicly denounced the pontiff for suggesting the global community should study whether the military offensive there constitutes a genocide of the Palestinian people. Francis opened his annual Christmas address to the Catholic cardinals, who lead the Vatican's various departments with what appeared to be a reference to Israeli airstrikes on Friday that killed at least 25 Palestinians in Gaza. Yesterday, children were bombed, said the Pope. This is cruelty. This is not war. I wanted to say this because it touches the heart. In book excerpts published last month, the pontiff said some international experts said that what is happening in Gaza has the characteristics of a genocide. Catholic news agency. Gaza Catholic Parish prepares for second Christmas under war. As Christmas approaches, the Latin Church of the Holy Family in Gaza is alive with activity. In these dark days, we wanted to offer a sign of hope, especially for our children. That's why, together with the kids, we prepared the nativity scene and the Christmas tree, Father Gabriel Romanelli, the parish priest, wrote in a recent Facebook post. The situation is dire, he said. Humanly speaking, this is a place of death where hope seems to have no place. The vast majority of the population lacks everything: food, water, medicine, electricity, shelter, beds, chairs, glasses, books, notebooks, toilet paper, soap, and everything. Despite the hardship, Gaza's Catholic community strives to keep the light of hope burning. Countercurrents. Bethlehem limits Christmas celebrations to prayers in solidarity with Gaza. The Bethlehem municipality announced that this year's Christmas events will be limited to prayers and religious rituals. The decision aims to show solidarity with Gaza and protest the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people by Israeli forces. Bethlehem governorate emphasized that canceling the celebrations rejects the injustices in Gaza and across Palestine. Mayor Anton Salmon confirmed the decision, saying, "We chose to restrict Christmas celebrations to prayers as a stand against the oppression faced by Gaza and all of the Palestine." Salmon strongly condemned the continued assault in Gaza. He criticized the international community's silence in the face of Israeli massacres. He called for serious and immediate action to end Israeli violations. The Guardian. Record number of protesters will be in UK prisons this Christmas. 40 people aged 22 to 58 incarcerated for direct actions on climate and Gaza actions amid crackdown on dissent. A record number of people who have taken part in protests will be in prison in the UK this Christmas, raising concern about the ongoing crackdown on dissent. 40 people aged from 22 to 58 will be behind bars on Christmas Day for planning or taking part in a variety of protests relating to the climate crisis or the war in Gaza. Several of them are facing years in prison after courts handed down the most severe sentences on record for direct action protests. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
As Christians light their candles and trees and spend their time with their loved ones, let us remember those who are suffering and enduring unimaginable hardship. The spirit of Christmas calls on us to stand in solidarity with those who suffer, to amplify their voices, and to advocate for justice. This season is a powerful reminder that love is not just a feeling, but a call to action, to reach out, to care, and to seek peace.
Father Khosravian emphasized that peace and resistance go hand in hand.
The Christian faith is most known for supporting compassion and love between human beings. How does it view defending the defenseless and standing up against oppression?
There is no mention in the scriptures that one should retreat in the face of tyranny. Never. On the contrary, it has always been stated that one must confront the oppressor by any means possible. Christ was a promoter of peace and friendship, but this does not mean that one should submit to oppression and tyranny. The phrase "turning the other cheek" means that if possible, one should strive for peace, not submit to humiliation and injustice in every situation. Resistance against tyranny is essential. You might want to play chess with your opponent, but they are wearing boxing gloves. In this case, insisting on a chess game is not sensible.
During Christmas, while children around the world joyfully unwrap gifts and celebrate the season with their families, children in Gaza face a harrowing reality marked by violence and loss. Instead of festive cheer, they endure the terror of bombardments, resulting in the tragic loss of life, limbs, and loved ones.
Where many children are filled with hope and excitement, those in Gaza grapple with trauma and grief as the ongoing conflict robs them of their innocence and safety. This stark contrast highlights the profound disparity in experiences, underscoring the urgent need for peace and a better future for all children, regardless of their circumstances.
I hope that 2025 will be a year filled with blessings and joy for the people of Iran, and that peace and tranquility will prevail across this entire planet, and the world will be free from any form of war and discord, even in the smallest and most remote places.
The UN's Human Rights Office has condemned the high number of civilians killed in the war in Gaza, saying its analysis shows close to 70% of verified victims over a six-month period were women and children. The agency said the high number was largely due to Israel's use of weapons with wide area effects in densely populated areas. The report released in early November said it found unprecedented levels of international law violations, raising concerns about war crimes and other possible atrocity crimes.
Meanwhile, we had the opportunity to converse with Father Gregoris Nersesian, who offered an intriguing insight from the Gospel.
In the Gospel of Luke, we read that at the time of the birth of Jesus Christ in the city of Bethlehem, angels descended from heaven and announced the birth of the Savior to the shepherds. At that moment, the angels began to sing a song that went, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." However, unfortunately, we witnessed great unrest in the very place where Jesus Christ was born, in Bethlehem and other areas of Palestine. We observe how a regime has broken the peace that God promised with the birth of Christ, leading countless innocent people to death and suffering.
As of mid-October 2024, the Israel regime has killed 2,100 Palestinian infants and toddlers under the age of 2, out of the about 17,000 children it has killed in the Gaza Strip since the start of its genocide on October 7, 2023. Israeli reservists who served in the Netzarim corridor, a recently built road that splits the Gaza Strip in two, have revealed that soldiers are under strict orders to shoot anyone they spot approaching the killing area. There is a line north of the Netzarim corridor known as the Line of Corpses, and the residents of Gaza are fully aware of its meaning. In this area, Palestinians are indiscriminately shot, and their bodies are left to be devoured by dogs, a commander from Division 252 told Haaretz. The killing area is the sniper's target range. We kill civilians there, and they are counted as terrorists, he added, revealing that a competition exists between the different army divisions occupying the east-to-west corridor. If Division 99 killed 150, then the next in line would try to reach 200. In the face of adversity, we must work to ensure that love triumphs over hatred and peace prevails over conflict. The true essence of Christmas is about connection and compassion. It reminds us that ultimately we are all part of a larger human family.
One of the attributes of God is justice. If we uproot a nation from its ancestral lands and deprive it of the right to choose its destiny, we have trampled upon justice. Since justice is one of the highest qualities of God, by violating justice, we are in fact showing disrespect to God Himself. Naturally, church leaders should follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ. Just as Jesus Christ was a herald of peace, tranquility, friendship, and love among humanity, these leaders should also promote love and compassion among people, and defend justice and the rights of the people.
Jesus' teachings are centered around love, compassion, peace, and justice. He emphasized the importance of taking care of the defenseless and standing up against oppression. The Sermon on the Mount is filled with such messages. Yet, as we witness the ongoing atrocities in Gaza, it's disheartening to see many Christian leaders around the world, people who profess to follow Christ, falling short of applying these teachings. The continued violence and humanitarian crisis have reached alarming levels, and the cries for help from those suffering have not received the urgent attention they deserve from global leaders.
Most governments that are currently supporting the Israeli regime and its genocide affiliate themselves with the Christian faith. How is justifiable?
You can wake someone who is asleep, but you cannot awaken someone who pretends to be asleep. You cannot wake up those Christian politicians who are pretending to be asleep. They are Christians in name only, as they support warmongers and child killers. As Christ said, one cannot serve two masters. You either follow wealth and power or follow God. If you are a God-fearing person, you must obey only His commandments. However, these politicians are more interested in wealth and clinging to power.
If the world's leaders, who often identify as Christians, truly embrace the core tenets of their faith, we might see a different approach to international relations, particularly in addressing the tragic situation in Gaza. Imagine a world where compassion guided policy, where leaders prioritize peace over politics, and where the words of Christ inspired action rather than indifference.
We hope that in the not-so-distant future, international organizations will cease this passivity and defend the oppressed Palestinian people. They should follow the example of a country like Iran, which has long struggled for the rights of the Palestinian people, standing on the right side of history, and sincerely addressing the need to protect the oppressed against the usurping Zionist regime.
This Christmas, as many gather to celebrate the spirit of love and peace, let us take a moment to remind the victims of the ongoing violence and suffering in Gaza and Lebanon. Let us hope that the true essence of Christmas, that is love, hope, and healing, extends to every corner of the world. Merry Christmas to all, with a wish for peace for those in desperate need.
In the end, we ask Mr. Mansourian to share his wishes for the new year.
I wish for the year 2025 to be a blessed year for the dear people of Iran, regardless of their religion or ethnicity, and that we can overcome the problems and challenges ahead. I also hope that in the region and in the world, war will give way to peace, and hatred and animosity will be replaced by love and compassion, so that we can free ourselves from the current situation we are in.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
From earth did God the untainted create you, so servant, earth-like, prostrate fall, indulge not greed. World-burning restiveness. Of earth you were created. Be not fire. While terrifying fire stretched forth its neck, earth cast itself down helpless. And since while one showed arrogance, the other mere deficiency, demons were made from the former and from the latter man. A raindrop trickled from a cloud, and was discomfited to see the ocean's width. Where there is the ocean, who am I? If it exists, then truly I do not. But while with disparagement's eye it saw itself, an oyster shell within its bosom clearly cherished it. And heavens at length so far advanced its cause that it became an imperial peer, renowned. Elevation it discovered by first becoming lowly. Nothingness's door it pounded until existence came to be. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to your very favorite program, For a Better Life. Once again, this is Nahid, being honored to host you on another episode. Well, as you just heard in the poem a few seconds ago of the famous Iranian poet Saadi Shirazi, we are going to highlight some characteristics of a true Muslim, while needless to mention, Saadi was also a Muslim person, and we are going to discuss humility. Welcome to your very favorite program for A Better Life, where we provide you with most of the elegant pieces of information and we all learn the life-saving messages. Well, what I said may look odd, right? But what if we, as normal people, do not highlight our efforts and get to be disregarded? That is the question we'll delve into today. The price for, and of course, the value of humility. The line between pride and humility is thin and thought-provoking. We are going to talk about it today. Like, what if a person, like me a few seconds ago, wants to mention and highlight whatever thing they are doing? Or if a person understands that what they are doing is not just for the sake of themselves and the others also, and is not that much proud, and tries to understand the other people as well. You know, humbleness is the opposite of pride. It is the ultimate form of respect towards others, honoring them and not disgracing them with arrogance. Without looking at their social or financial situations, humbleness is a proof as to the existence of good character, purity of the self, and sound sense. Humbleness is a sign that a person is strongly attached to his faith. It is the proof of good morals and means leading to paradise. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had said, "The abode of the hereafter we grant it to those who do not seek to exalt themselves in the earth or to cause corruption in it." So, as we can see here, we are not supposed to be in this world, exist on the earth, be proud of the things we have. Although still I have to mention that it is something that sometimes we disregard and we feel like if I'm not highlighting whatever good thing that I'm doing, then I'm kind of keeping a low profile of myself. But humility is something much more valuable and precious in our religion. Allah himself informs us in this verse that I just mentioned that the hereafter and its eternal blessings were reserved by himself for his humble, faithful servants who do not act arrogantly towards his other creation. Humbleness is one of the attributes of the behavior who do not behave with haughtiness or tyranny towards the others. When they are abused by foolish people, they do not respond likewise. They forgive them instead and say only that which is good to them. Allah said about this type of people, "The servants of the All-Merciful are those who walk lightly on the earth, and when the ignorant speak to them, they say, 'Peace.'" Allah enjoined on his messenger humbleness with people. It's like when we look at our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, we see the sample of a true person who, although is the last prophet, who has too many things and blessings to be proud of, he is still trying to be humble. And also Allah commanded him to never act boastfully towards people. Allah has said in Quran, "Be moderate in your tread and lower your voice." The Prophet used to command his companions to observe humbleness in their life as well and avoid haughtiness or arrogance. He informed them all of the benefits they would gain if they behave with humbleness and try to regard to their Lord and creation. Our Prophet has said, "Allah has revealed to me that you must be humble, so that no one oppresses another and boasts over others." So you see, I know it is sometimes disregarded, but still, when we just look at our history of creation and we see the Prophet saying so, we kind of get the understanding that, yeah, as a human being, as a Muslim person, I am also supposed to act upon this.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Is all I need.
So all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It has also been narrated from the Prophet, there are four characteristics that Allah gives only to those he loves. Silence, which is the first act of worship, reliance in Allah, humbleness, and asceticism. Again, this is one of the four characteristics. It's really important. Like when our dear Prophet is listing the characteristics that a true Muslim should have, he puts humbleness among them. Also, in a hadith Qudsi, the Prophet ﷺ said, Allah the Almighty said, pride is my cloak and greatness is my garment. So whoever competes with me regarding these two will be thrown into hellfire. So we have the opposite side also prepared for us in our religion. For us, as the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we need to know and keep in mind that if we want a life which is full of blessings, if we want to be open to new opportunities, and if we want to be able to improve, to understand the teachings and implement them in our daily lives, we are supposed to stay humble. Although if we have, I don't know, a high situation, or even if, again, reminder to the poem, even if we are the king of the world, but we are not staying humble and we are too much proud and arrogant, we will stay alone and no one on this earth, at least, will help us. In the other, maybe there are some people to punish us for being that much proud. Namely, the story of Iblis and Quran. Remember? The story of Iblis and Quran and human, also insan, are somewhat similar and both teach us that we need to adopt the qualities of humility and submissiveness and avoid the destructive sins of arrogance and self-pride. So both would lead us to destruction in both worlds. Like he had the high value in place. He was the angel. But after just getting to be a little, not a little, getting to be proud, getting to be arrogant, he lost everything for the price of his arrogance, which is not worthy at all. Well, this is the end of this episode. Until another episode of For a Better Life, I wish you humbleness, I wish you blessings, and I wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good. son to you. See, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you. You who have my roots. Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since some of thee inside my aching heart, some of thee inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots we hear, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
More civilians are killed in Gaza as the Israeli military presses ahead with a genocidal war on the Palestinian territory. Iranians marking the anniversary of the 2009 rallies that put an end to riots hatched by the West against Tehran following the presidential election. And a South Korean passenger plane, 180 people on board, catches fire during landing. It's good to have you with us. Palestinians in Gaza have woken up to more Israeli attacks as the regime in Tel Aviv presses ahead with a genocidal campaign against the blockaded territory. At least two people were killed after warplanes bombed a residential building in the Al-Nasr neighborhood near Rafah. Casualties were also reported after regime forces targeted a group of civilians near the Abdulaziz Mosque in central Gaza Strip. Israeli drones also staged a similar strike, killing several Palestinians in the Nusayr refugee camp in central Gaza. The aggression against Gaza began in October 2023, and ever since, nearly 45,500 Palestinians have been killed and some 108,000 others injured. Lack of water, food, and other basic necessities has also taken its toll on the population in Gaza. Okay, now for more information and an update on the ground, let's go to Gaza. We have Abu Bakr Abed, our correspondent there. Let's see what update Abu Bakr has for us.
Yeah, as you just said,